Pages 175 to 202 of The Umbrella Maker's Son. Apologies. That night, after a dinner of lasagna and salad, Sage and Oscar went up to Sage's bedroom to continue their game. They had just about finished when Mrs. Cleverer poked her head into the room and held up two mugs of hot chocolate. "A little something for the almost birthday guy?" she said lightly, but Oscar noted how she never quite looked him in the eye. Was he imagining that? But no, he didn't think he was. He thanked her for the drink, and she nodded and placed them both on Sage's nightstand, then slipped out of the room again. "Is your mom all right?" Oscar asked hesitantly, handing Sage one of the mugs. They were playing on the floor, using the beanbags as backrests. Sage took a sip of the hot chocolate and sighed happily. "She says she's just adjusting," she replied. "I think she misses the spice store. She doesn't have a job here, you know. Dad says she doesn't need one." "Do you think she misses the alley in general?" Oscar asked, because he knew he would, if he had to leave it. No matter how nice and big and new and bright Roan Piers and Commerce City were, the alley was Oscar's home. He couldn't imagine living anywhere but Dove. "She says she doesn't," Sage replied. "Do you?" Sage paused at that. She took another sip of hot chocolate. "I miss parts of it," she admitted. "I miss our fort. I miss East Market. I miss Bleak Beach. I miss riding the bus with you around and round, not even having anywhere to go. I miss our bedroom windows and how we could wave at each other before we left for school. I miss Ebba. I miss seeing my dad." Mr. Cleverer hadn't joined them for dinner. He'd left the house shortly after Oscar had arrived, and as far as Oscar knew, he hadn't yet returned. "He's working a lot?" Oscar asked. "A lot. And when he isn't at work, he's working here in his study. He shuts himself in. He's always on the phone or the typewriter. Mum leaves food outside the door and tries to keep Arthur as quiet as possible. What does a chief engineer do, anyway?" "I'm not really sure," Sage admitted. "When I do see him, he doesn't like to talk about it. We play buzzball or go explore the neighborhood or something. But he's really quiet. Like, he's not paying attention." "I'm sorry," Oscar said. Sage just nodded in a vague kind of way and took another sip of her hot chocolate. Then, brightening, she said, "Oh!" and pointed at the elaborate board game set up in front of them. Duh. "Our next move. We can defeat the dragon in 3 steps. Don't you see it?" Oscar studied the pieces laid out in such a complicated manner that it almost looked like they'd just thrown them all on the floor, letting them fall wherever. "The cleric," he guessed. "Yes," Sage said. She used her turn to move the cleric to the abandoned boardwalk, and then Oscar saw it. They defeated the dragon in 2 more moves. After a brief celebration, Mrs. Cleverer reappeared in the doorway. "About time to get ready for bed. Okay, kids?" "Sure, Mom," Sage replied. "The game in question is called Burgeoning Bloomrackers, and, as I mentioned, is based on a popular comic book. Burgeoning means something that is growing rapidly, and the Bloomrackers were a fictional group of children who banded together to fight petty crime in their city of Smolder. They took turns using the bathroom, brushing their teeth and washing their faces. Sage was excited to show Oscar how her bed worked. The hydraulics lifted each bed into the air in a rotating circle, almost like a Ferris wheel, so that Sage could move from dot to the bottom bunk, then press a button and transform the bottom bunk into the top bunk. "Cool, right?" she said. "Super cool," Oscar agreed. He got onto what was now the bottom bunk, and Sage pressed another button, then stopped the rotation of the beds when they were on the same level, about 2 feet apart from each other. "Hey," Sage said. Oscar laughed. "Hey." "Thanks for coming," she said, "to visit. I didn't know if you would." "Why wouldn't I?" "Because I'm kind of surprised you invited me at all." "Why wouldn't I?" "Because..." A long pause. "I thought you wouldn't want to be friends with me anymore," Oscar admitted, "now that you live here. honestly, I thought you wouldn't want to be friends with me anymore. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, too. I guess things have just gotten a little complicated. Yep. Do you think we'll be able to do it? Still be friends? I do, Sage said after just a moment's hesitation. Don't you? Yeah, Oscar said, I do. Oscar looked over at her for a few minutes, looked over at her a few minutes later, but she was already asleep, her eyes closed, her breathing even and deep. He turned off the bedside lamp and listened into the silence and darkness of the house. Mrs. Clever was still moving around downstairs. He could hear her footsteps on the tile floor of the kitchen, and every now and then he heard a cabinet or a door shut. About 15 minutes after they'd turned the lights off, Oscar heard a car pull into the driveway. The front door opened and closed. Oscar heard Mr. and Mrs. Clever's muffled voices. After another few minutes, one set of footsteps padded softly upstairs. Oscar sat up. He was suddenly wide awake. He knew he couldn't miss his chance. He'd wait until Mr. Clever went to bed, and then he'd break into his study. The secret compartment. As it turned out, Mr. Clever didn't come upstairs for at least another hour, and although Oscar had felt wide awake at the beginning of the wait, by about halfway through, he had to pinch himself to stop from falling asleep. He made a game of lifting one leg off the bed for as long as he could, and then the other, then an arm, then the other arm. He thought he might just doze off once, and he jerked awake at the sound of a door closing nearby. Mr. and Mrs. Clever's bedroom door. He got out of bed as slowly and quietly as he could, managing to avoid tripping over Sage's wheelchair. He poked his head into the hallway. All the second floor lights were off. The house was like a dark abyss, quiet and pitch black. Oscar tiptoed over to the stairs, remembering to avoid the side with the track on it, keeping a good grip on the railing as he made his way down. The buckle stairs were creaky and loud and impossible to sneak down, but these stairs were new and absolutely soundless as he made his way to the first floor. All was dark down here, too. Actually might have been a little creepy had Oscar's body not currently been a vessel of pure adrenaline. He couldn't feel much of any other emotion. There simply wasn't enough room to contain it. His fingers buzzed with it. His feet hummed with it. His body was practically vibrating as he reached the bottom of the stairs and turned right to enter the living room. The windows were wide here, and there was enough moonlight to see by, so as to not run into the couch or the armchairs or the coffee table. He crossed the room quickly, pausing at the far end of it just to listen, to make sure everything was still silent. The study was at the back of the house, and Oscar held his breath as he reached out and gripped the doorknob, saying a silent prayer before he turned it, and found it locked. Well, he had expected that, and he'd come prepared. He removed his lock-picking pin from his pocket and took a deep breath, steadying himself. This is the same lock-picking pin Oscar used to open the door that led to Dove's roof. He held the pin up, watching it glint in the moonlight. There was never this much moonlight in the alley. Most nights, there were so many clouds, you couldn't see the sky at all. And that is what Oscar thought about as he gently maneuvered the pin into the lock. That is what he thought about as he closed his eyes, concentrating all his senses on the tiny movements his fingers made, the twist, the catch, the jiggle, the soft sigh of the lock as it gave way. Oscar pushed into the room, almost closing the door behind him before he decided to leave it open a crack, just a crack, so he could hear if anyone was coming, or if anybody was coming. There was a switch on the wall that Oscar assumed controlled the overhead light, but he avoided that, moving instead to the desk and turning on a much smaller lamp. Then he paused and tried to decide where to start. Aside from the desk, there were wooden filing cabinets on either side of a long bookshelf against the far wall. There were also boxes lining an adjacent wall, some of them with lids half hanging off, revealing piles and piles of paperwork in each of them. Oscar sat in the desk chair and decided to start with what was right in front of him, the desk. It stood to reason that the most important papers would be within reaching distance, right? Wrong. He went through every single drawer on the desk, finding nothing of any real importance. There were six of them, he found in no particular order: doctor's slips, an x-ray of a broken arm, receipts for most of the new furniture in the house, report cards from Sage's lowers and middles, multiple manila folders of artwork and blueprints Sage had completed over the years, anniversary cards from Mrs. Cleverer to her husband, a few paperback romance novels, and lots of new office supplies. Aside from the lamp, there were only four objects on the desk. One fancy-looking typewriter with a fresh sheet of paper set into it, a phone, one framed photo, and one unframed photo. The framed photo showed Sage and Arthur sitting together in their old kitchen in Woodpecker. The unframed photo was propped up against the framed photo, and this showed an expanse of green grass with a small dog sitting in the middle of it. Oscar picked up this photo. The dog must have belonged to Mr. Cleverer when he was a boy, since the photo was old and worn, and the Cleverers had never had a dog as long as Oscar had known them. He turned over the photo. On the back was a single word, Scrappy. He set the photo back how it was, so just so. Then he started with the filing cabinets. Nothing. There was more to do with Braun Industries here, at least, like umbrella sketches and office memos, but nothing really important. The boxes that lined the wall were daunting, and Oscar figured he'd probably already been in the study for 45 minutes. His back was hurting from spending so much time hunched over rifling through papers. He needed to rest to regroup. He lay down on the floor and stretched his arms over his head, making his body as long as possible. His bones cracked and popped so loudly that he thought someone might actually hear them, but the gaping, enormous silence of the house stayed silent. The darkness outside of the study door stayed dark. He was the only one awake in the house. Of that, he was certain. He didn't think it was physically possible to go through all the boxes in the room. There were dozens, and papers were spilling out of the tops of them. Some of them had unhelpful writing on the side, like 1390 project, canceled, or canopy specifications, or rib materials. The longer he lay on the floor, the more he thought he ought to just give up entirely. There was no point in wasting any more time. Plus, he was tired, and that was when he realized, with something of a shock, that it was his birthday. He guessed it was around 2 or 3 in the morning, so he'd been 12 for a few hours and hadn't even realized it. Bilious had once told Oscar that his mother thought it was good luck to start every birthday with a wish. "It should be the first thing that comes out of your lips," Bilious had said, "the first thing you whisper when you wake up in the morning." Oscar didn't know what to wish for. He wanted so many things. He wanted Sage to move back to the alley. He wanted Buckle Umbrellas to be as successful as it used to be. He wanted Braun Industries to go out of business. He wanted to find time to carve the block of monk wood in his room. To carve anything. He wanted to carve wood for the rest of his life. To find the hidden lines locked inside it. To run his blade over the grain and reveal the secrets it held within. He wanted Gregory Fairmountain and Tim Clint to fall into a big puddle of slime or boogers or mud. He wanted whoever had painted Sage's bedroom wall such an ugly color to move out of Woodpecker immediately. But you had to pick one thing for your birthday wish. So Oscar closed his eyes, inhaled slowly, and whispered into the stillness of the room, "I wish I knew what to do." It might have been a vague wish, as far as wishes go, but it felt right to Oscar. In previous years, Oscar had wished for a bike, a million skiffs, a sailboat, superpowers, and an unlimited supply of wood for his carvings. He kept his eyes closed for a few seconds, letting the wish fill his body, imagining it as a ball of light moving underneath his skin, and then he opened his eyes and saw the hidden compartment in the underside of Mr. Cleverer's desk. It was an exceptionally clever secret compartment as far as secret compartments went. You wouldn't have been able to see it unless you knew it was there, as Mr. Clever surely did, or unless you were lying flat on the floor, which Oscar was. It blended in perfectly with the underside of the desk. He could just make out the almost invisible line that separated the door of the compartment from the rest of the wood of the desk, and because it was so cleverly hidden, it wasn't even locked. Obviously, Mr. Clever wasn't worried about anyone ever finding it. Oscar scrambled to his hands and knees and crawled towards it. The door was slanted at a downward angle so that when he pulled it open, a fat white envelope slid out and smacked him directly in the face. He sat back, rubbing his nose, scooting a few inches so that the small circle of light from the desk lamp reached him. There was no writing on the outside of the envelope. It was fastened shut with a piece of string wound around two small metal discs. Oscar unwound the string carefully, then removed a thick stack of papers from inside of it. There were folded blueprints here, along with few handwritten notes or pages of notes and scribbles and a thick stapled together booklet. He laid everything down in three piles. The first thing he did was unfold the blueprints. They were quite big, and he had to move a little to find a spot on the floor where he could lay them out. There were three sheets stapled together in one corner. The top corner seemed to depict some kind of building or structure. It was complicated with lots of inset diagrams and boxes and smaller drawings within the larger drawing, and tiny, neat writing labeling everything with numbers and letters that didn't make any sense to him. Oscar blinked a few times, then stood up to see it at a bit of a distance. Whatever it was big. It was taller than it was wide, shaped almost like Mr. Clever's desk lamp, actually. There were a bunch of little squiggles around the base of it that Oscar couldn't identify. A piece of the thing was X-rayed so that you could see inside of it, and the inner workings were so complicated that Oscar felt overwhelmed just looking at them. It was almost like some sort of machine inside of some sort of building. But what kind of building was so tall and skinny? Oscar rubbed his eyes. He really was tired now. His brain felt mushy and slow. He looked back at the blueprint, scanning it again, starting at the bottom. Oh, the squiggles. Were they waves? And the desk lamp thing, of course. It was a lighthouse. The only lighthouse Oscar knew of was Gray Lighthouse, which stood on a small island. The island is so small that it doesn't have an official name, but most people refer to it as Gray Island, since it is in the Gray Sea and home to the Gray Lighthouse. Off the coast of Bleak Beach, and had been shuttered in dark for years now, he couldn't be sure these blueprints were of Gray Lighthouse, but it seemed like the most probable answer. But why would Mr. Clever have blueprints of a lighthouse in his desk? As far as Oscar knew, Braun Industries had nothing at all to do with Gray Lighthouse. Oscar turned to the second blueprint page. The outline of the lighthouse was there, but now you could see the inside of it. There was a spiral staircase that wound around the walls, leading up to the top of the building. And there was a strange machine. It was seamlessly integrated into the interior of the lighthouse, making use of all available space, which made it huge. Oscar had no idea what it did. There was more writing on this blueprint, but again, it was all in weird shorthand and codes. Oscar flipped to the third and last page. This one was zoomed in on the top of the lighthouse, where the actual light should have been. It was hard to figure out what he was looking at, but it seemed almost like there were dozens of skinny little cannons poking through holes in the roof of the building. The space around these cannons was filled with hundreds of little dots. They looked a bit like stars in the night sky. He left the blueprint on the floor and turned back to the other two piles. First, he picked up the typed pages. There were about 20 or 30 stapled together. The cover read simply, Project Gray. Project Gray? That sounded a little creepy. He turned the page, then turned that page, then quickly fanned through all of the pages. Well, these weren't going to be helpful at all. Basically, all of the text was blacked out with thick permanent marker. He thought there was a word for that. There is, and that word is redacted. It's for when things are really secret, so secret that the person writing about it can't risk someone else actually reading it, which sort of makes one wonder, why write it down in the first place? There were only a few words in the entire stack that weren't blacked out. Gray, sea, atmospheric, conversion, patterns, increase. Oscar laid the stack of paper down and picked up the handwritten notes. There weren't as many of these, only 5, and they were written in faint pencil, in a sloppy script that Oscar found almost impossible to read. He thought he could pick out a few words, something that might have been heather? What was heather? A type of plant, maybe? Another word that might have been secret or sacred? Another word he thought was maintenance, but could also have been machinery or macadamia. He was beginning to feel like this whole thing was a big waste of time. He'd broken into Mr. Clever's office, gone through all of the things, and all he had to show for it was some weird blueprints for a lighthouse, a stack of paper that was more black marker than words, and unreadable notes. He'd broken into Mr. Clever's office. What was he thinking? All because a random Farsouthian had told him some cryptic nonsense about a locked door? The handwriting was really quite bad. Oscar was done with all this. He just wanted to go to bed, and that was when he heard the footsteps upstairs. He froze, and then he leapt into motion, hurriedly gathering everything up, refolding the blueprints as the footsteps moved from the upstairs hallway to the stairs. He slipped everything back into the envelope, and as he did, a page of notes fluttered to the floor. Oscar picked it up, and just before he shoved it into the envelope, he paused, because he could read one line of the notes, and it said, "Request for ongoing maintenance, reports for WM. WM? What did that mean? And there wasn't time to look for even a second longer. The footsteps had reached the first floor. Oscar shoved that single piece of notepaper into his pocket, then crammed all the other paperwork back into the envelope, wrapped the string to close it, and slipped everything back into the secret compartment. He dove for the desk light and turned it off, then listened with horror as the footsteps paused, then picked up speed. He threw himself across the room, slipped out the door, and didn't dare close it as he moved deeper into the house, sticking to the shadows at the edges of the hallway. His heart was racing as he did the only thing he could think to do. He ran into the bathroom, turned the light on, and began washing his hands in the sink. A moment later, Mr. Cleverer popped his head around the open door. "Oscar, what are you doing down here?" "Just using the bathroom," Oscar said, trying to keep his voice cheerful and light. "I didn't want to wake anyone by using the one upstairs." Mr. Cleverer glanced behind him, back in the direction of his study. "There was another light," he said. Oscar cleared his throat. "No, I don't think so. Just this one." "And my study door is open," Mr. Cleverer continued, turning back to Oscar. "I never leave my study door open." Oscar turned off the water and dried his hands with a towel. He did his best to make himself look sleepy and confused as he turned to Mr. Cleverer and said, "Sorry, sir, but can I get a glass of water?" Mr. Cleverer looked at Oscar for just a moment too long, and then he relaxed and shook his head softly, chuckling to himself. Of course, Oscar. I'm sorry, I think you just startled me a little. I'm half asleep myself." "No problem, Mr. Clever. Sorry." Oscar slipped past him and made his way to the kitchen, his heart beating so hard within his chest that he felt like he might collapse or throw up or both, in either order. Because while he'd been in the bathroom trying desperately to look normal in front of Mr. Cleverer, he'd figured it out. He'd figured out what those blueprints were for. Those dots surrounding the top of the lighthouse, those weren't stars at all. They were rain. The word heather had actually been weather. Secret? Machinery? Conversion? The note he had shoved into his pocket? Request for ongoing maintenance reports for WM? WM, it stood for Weather Machine. Braun Industries had turned Gray Lighthouse into a weather machine. No friend of mine. Oscar did not sleep a wink that night, and when Sage finally woke in the morning and rolled over and said sleepily, "Happy birthday, Oscar," he pretended to be just waking up, stretching and yawning as he thanked her. "Did you sleep okay?" she asked. Oscar didn't know how to answer her. What would she say if he admitted that he hadn't slept okay, that he'd actually spent half the night breaking into her father's locked study and the other half of the night feeling weird and guilty about it? Yeah, I slept okay," he made himself say. "What about you?" "Great," she said. "It was fun to have someone share the bunk bed with." Oscar got off the bed and waited while Sage used the hydraulic lift to lower her bed to the floor. She gripped the handles of her wheelchair and carefully moved into the seat. "Hungry?" she asked. "Mum said she'd make waffles for breakfast for your birthday." "Sounds great," Oscar said. Mr. and Mrs. Cleverer and Arthur were already downstairs in the kitchen, and although Oscar tried to act normal and sleepy, like he'd just woken up, he was actually suddenly feeling very awake and extremely self-conscious and fairly uncomfortable and just a bit scared. But that was ridiculous, right? He had no reason to be afraid of Mr. Cleverer, did he? No, he was overreacting. There was a perfectly reasonable explanation for why Mr. Cleverer had the blueprints for a weather machine in the hollowed-out shell of an abandoned lighthouse. There must have been. The waffles were excellent, anyway, and after they'd eaten, Oscar opened up a small pile of gifts, including a few new comic books, new woodworking tools with lovely smooth handles, and a 500-piece puzzle. He couldn't shake the feeling, through all of it, that Mr. Cleverer had looked his way too much, kept letting his gaze fall on Oscar just a bit too often. It made Oscar feel unsettled, exposed. He was happy when Sage suggested they go to her room and play another game of burgeoning bloom rackers. Before it was time to drive Oscar back to the alley, Mrs. Cleverer called upstairs a few hours later and told them it was time to go. Oscar was relieved when he reached the foyer and found that Mr. Cleverer had taken Arthur out for the afternoon. It would just be Mrs. Cleverer and Sage driving him back to the alley. Sage was sad to see him go, and he was sad to be leaving her, but it felt like a much deeper sort of sadness. One that extended past just this visit, just this car ride. Oscar couldn't help but feel like he was leaving her forever, that he would never see her again. When they got to the alley, Mrs. Cleverer eased the car into a parking spot. "I just want to pop over and see my friends at rainy season," she said. "Sage, would that be all right with you?" "I won't be too long." "Of course, Mom," Sage said. "I'll go with Oscar to Dove. It'll be nice to say hi to Bilious." Oscar grabbed his overnight bag from the car and waited while the car's lift lowered Sage and Dot to the pavement. They were quiet as Oscar held the door of Dove open for Sage, quiet as they crossed the small lobby to the elevator, and quiet as they saw the sign taped crookedly to the door, "Out of order." "Nice to see some things never change," Sage said with a huff. "Sorry," Oscar mumbled. "It's not your fault. Let me run up and grab my dad. He'll want to come down and say hi to you." Oscar took a step toward the stairway door, but Sage moved Dot so she was facing him, blocking his way forward. It was slinking out. This is that gentle and steady rain that's just shy of a spillin'. Sage still had her umbrella open, and there were drops of liquid falling off the tips of the ribs. WM. He squeezed his eyes shut. He wanted to stop thinking about what he had found in Mr. Cleverer's office, but he couldn't. "You've barely said a word since breakfast," Sage said. "You've barely said a word all day. What's wrong?" "I'm sorry," he said. I don't really like my birthday." "Oscar, you love your birthday," Sage said. "I've known you since we were babies. I know when something's wrong. I'm just tired. Are you going to keep trying different lies until you find one I believe?" "What? No, of course not." That is actually exactly what he had been planning to do. I know you were in my father's study last night, she said, and Oscar froze, not even blinking, as he stared at her. I heard you get out of bed. I figured you were just using the bathroom. I thought you took kind of a long time, but I was falling in and out of sleep. But then this morning, I heard my dad whispering to my mom. He said his study door was open. He said he found you downstairs. I wanted to give you a chance to tell me what happened yourself, because we tell each other everything. But now you're barely looking at me or talking to me. So before you try to think up another lie, tell me what you were really doing last night. Sage stared at him, unblinking. Oscar tried to blink, but found himself unable to. He was still frozen. He didn't want to tell Sage what he'd found. This was her father. And the allegations Oscar was about to make were pretty serious, but he didn't want to lie to Sage. Not when she was looking at him so intensely, so fiercely. But how could he say what he wanted to say? He didn't think he'd actually be able to get the words out, so he didn't. Instead, he took the piece of paper from his pocket and he handed it to her. She looked confused as she glanced over it. What is this? I took it from your father's study, Oscar said. He was right. I was in there. I picked the lock. Why? When we were supposed to meet at the night market, Gregory and Tim showed up instead, Oscar began, taking a deep breath to steady himself. They chased me through the market into this weird section called the Others. The Others, Sage repeated. I don't remember that part of the night market. Right. Nobody does. I even tried to go back and find it, and I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It was there, and then it wasn't. But Gregory and Tim, that's where they chased me. I ran into this pole and completely knocked myself out. When I woke up, I was in a tiny tent. This far Southian girl, Eunice, had pulled me inside. Gregory and Tim got taken away by the guards. She totally saved me from getting beaten up. She called herself a teller. She gave me a reading and she knew about you. And she said there would be one locked room in your house and that I needed to get inside it. Oscar took a deep breath. He realized he was speeding through the story, hardly pausing for air. Sage was looking at him with wide, almost frightened eyes. Are you telling the truth? She asked quietly. Sage, I don't have that good of an imagination. Oscar said, actually laughing, do you really think I'd be able to make all this up? True, Sage said, smiling hesitantly. She held the paper up. So what is this? I found blueprints in your dad's office. He had this secret compartment under his desk, and the blueprints show a lighthouse with a machine inside it. A lighthouse. Like that old one on the island near Bleak Beach. Exactly. Gray lighthouse. What kind of machine? Oscar pointed at the one legible line of writing on the piece of paper. Sage held. Request for ongoing maintenance reports for WM. I don't get it, Sage said. WM? Oscar read. I think it stands for weather machine. Sage shook her head. What? That's ridiculous. WN could mean literally anything. Wacky marmalade, wonderful marshmallows, weird monkeys. She pushed the paper back into Oscar's hands. It's not just this, he insisted. I told you, there were blueprints. They showed the machine. It had these cannon things. They were shooting rain out of the sides of the lighthouse. They were making the rain. And there were all these notes and things. They talked about a conversion. They talked about the weather. Sage, think about it. No, she interrupted and turned her wheelchair around. Sage! She spun around again so quickly Oscar had to jump backward to avoid being hit by Dot's wheels. If you're suggesting that my father had something to do with... She looked around, then lowered her voice to a whisper. A weather machine? Something that doesn't even exist? By the way, then you are no friend of mine, Oscar Buckle. And she turned away from him a second time and raced toward Dove's front doors and pushed back out into the rain.